Hello, and welcome to show number 2502 of Eyes on Success, a weekly program empowering the visually impaired with expert advice, personal stories, and the latest in technology and accessibility. I'm Nancy Goodman-Torpy.
And I'm Pete Torpy. Well, last week's episode, we talked with a couple, one of whom is sighted and one whom is blind, who met when they were in their teens. Today, we'll be talking about what might happen decades later to such a couple.
We didn't even meet until we were 30. And at this point, we've been married for 41 years. And Pete was blind long before any of that. So here's our story of what we think it's like in a partnership where one is blind and one is sighted. But first, for our tip of the week. Well, this week's show is basically tip after tip after tip. But in addition to that, here's a more general tip. Any long-term relationship is a partnership. We do things with each other and for each other all the time. If one partner has a limitation, even if it's as small as not being able to reach the new box of Cheerios, the other one just naturally steps in to get done whatever's needed. We've been married for 30 years, but we're also still partners. Pete's blindness may be more obvious a limitation than my shortness, but we're always running into issues where one or the other of us can't do something by him or herself, and the other one pitches in and somehow it all gets done.
Support for Eyes on Success is provided by
InnoSearch AI, an accessible e-commerce tool for the blind. You can find your favorite electronics, groceries, or do some early holiday shopping at InnoSearch.ai, now partnered with over 500,000 retailers. That's InnoSearch.ai.
And by
Glidance, pioneers of Glide, an intelligent guide for the blind and low vision community. Glide's AI-powered technology guides you around obstacles, hazards, and more, providing audio and haptic feedback, getting you where you need to go safely and independently. More information is at glidance.io/eyes. That's glidance.io/EYES.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
Well, where to start? This is the part of the show where we often introduce our guests. We don't have any guests. So let's start talking about the beginning of our relationship, who we were at the time, and how we met. Pete?
Well, when we met, I was 30, as was Nancy. I had been blind for all of my life, although I had seen a reasonable amount when I was younger. I could hold a book several inches from my nose and read it. But by the time I was up in Rochester, I was working for Xerox, and I used a cane to get around, although I had enough vision to see the side of the sidewalk so I could navigate a little bit easier. I lived alone. I carpooled to work. I had a job as a research scientist. And in living alone, I did my own cooking and cleaning and walked to the supermarket on weekends with a backpack on my back and a list for the grocery store. And they would always have someone help me do my groceries. And I was pretty independent.
Many of the same things that Pete just said about himself could be said about me. I was also 30. I had a job as a research scientist at Xerox, but I didn't really have any visual limitations. Although I've been wearing eyeglasses since I was 3, with corrective lenses, I can see just fine.
In fact, we had many ways in which to meet when Nancy first showed up in Rochester.
In graduate school, we had each independently taken up American contra dancing, which is very similar to American square dancing, but in different shapes. And also very similar to English country dancing. And it turned out when we each got to Rochester, we each found the local contra dance group, and that's where we found each other. Support for Eyes on Success comes from our listeners and corporate sponsors.
For more information about airing promotional items on the show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
This week's focus topic is what life is like for the partner of a blind person. Most of our listeners have visual impairments themselves. Maybe you want to go grab whoever you're living with and get them to listen to this part with you.
So when Nancy showed up at Xerox dancing and in Rochester, we ran into each other many places and we immediately started becoming friends. And one of the questions I always had was, you know, you must have had some reservations about dating a blind man and thought about that more than once or twice.
You know, I have one brother and he pretty much all my life has accused me of being a pathological optimist. And when I started dating Pete, like he said, we had become friends in my first several months in Rochester. We had gotten to know each other quite well. He was quite independent. He did basically everything except drive a car and work power tools. And I really didn't have any reservations. We ran into our fair share of stories and incidents, but it really didn't faze me.
Well, you were also a pretty self-assured and self-confident person, so maybe that didn't affect you as much as it might have affected someone else.
But you had already demonstrated over and over and over that you were clearly capable of taking care of yourself at home. You'd been living alone for 3 or 4 years at that point. You were able to take care of yourself at work. You were a highly sought-after dance partner. It was all I could do to get a dance in with you at the dances, and I didn't really see big hurdles.
So fortunately, you were able to look past all of possible issues, but your parents weren't quite as open-minded as I recall.
They just didn't know you as well.
That didn't go over really big at the time.
No, it didn't. And frankly, if my kid came home and announced that he or she was going to marry somebody who I didn't know very well but had apparent limitations, I might get a little nervous too. But over the years, as they've gotten to know you, they've certainly come around. And we actually did a show 2.5 years ago about life with a blind man, where we interviewed Pete's parents and my parents and our kids and his sister and a little bit of me as his wife. And, you know, you can hear my parents saying, well, yeah, they had reservations at first, but they've really come to accept and admire Pete.
And if you want to hear more of that, we'll have a link to that in the show notes, so you don't have to be wondering where to get that. But anyways, even as we were dating, we talked about the balancing act and compensating for each other, and there were certain accommodations that had to be made. When we went most places, I didn't do the driving.
I did. I still do.
But there were other things also. When we got to know each other better, and we were often dancing with each other at the dances, as I recall, I did have some vision, and contrast made a big difference to me. So how did you take advantage of knowing that?
I made sure to wear bright dresses that contrasted with the color of the walls. In fact, I enjoy sewing. It's one of my hobbies. And I made myself a couple of dresses, and they were perfect because they were really bright and they contrasted with the walls. And sure enough, the dance group moved to another building. And wouldn't you know, the dresses didn't contrast with the walls anymore. So that was disappointing. But I always managed to find something that he could see a little bit better than average. One thing I did do, if you're the partner of somebody who's got low vision, is I made sure to wear a lot of solid colors, because if my entire shirt was one color, then to Pete, it looked like it was that color. But if it was striped or any other print, then all of those colors blended together and it just looked like gray or brown. And then it, even though it might look bright to someone with normal vision, to somebody with low vision, it looked really drab. And so I avoided that. But now that he can't see anything, I can wear whatever I want. There was one thing about our dating that was kind of fun. Pete was very chivalrous. And after a date, he would always walk me home to my front door, which was all of a couple of blocks away from his apartment.
You were supposed to do that, right?
I thought that was very sweet. And?
And? Well, after I walked her home, there was a street I had to cross in order to get myself back home where there wasn't a traffic light and there was a fair amount of traffic. And I was always nervous about crossing that street. So after I walked her home,
all the way to the door,
she would walk me to the corner of that street, make sure I got across the street okay, and we'd wave and I'd continue on my way and she'd go back to her home.
But he tried.
Anyway, after we got married, you know, the way we work around the house is also very interesting. And again, we compensate for each other. Some of it is vision and some of it is other things. You know, you always talk about how when we're doing fix-it projects around the house, that in our case, the eyeballs are not connected to the muscles. When it comes down to lifting and pulling and pushing heavy things around, Nancy often likes some assistance. Well, she can see where the objects are going, but I can't. So she's essentially driving me around.
Yeah, it's great. It's like running a remote controlled car.
Right. But Nancy loves to do fix-it projects around the house. And again, I'll help out with some of the ones that she's not comfortable using if they require more strength. But I stay away from things like saws and nasty things that can do me damage.
But you're always very good about cleaning up after I've made a mess doing these fix-it projects. And, you know, that's time-consuming, too. So even though he maybe isn't involved in the drilling and the hammering and the sawing and all of that stuff, just knowing that he's available and good-natured about cleaning up whatever mess I've made, that's a big help. And likewise in the kitchen, Pete doesn't like to cook. I know he can. He's actually done it for me a few times.
I'm great at yogurt and cereal.
Yeah, like I said.
No, I actually can cook, but I just don't enjoy it. So she predominantly cooks and I predominantly clean up. I kind of like that. I can stay in one place right by the sink. Although when you had your shoulder surgery and you couldn't use your arm for several months, I did the cooking. And that's just the way it worked.
And we graciously accepted kind offers from many friends to make meals for us.
So even when it comes to cleaning the house, I mean, the way we'll partition tasks is Nancy will often do the dusting and the things that involve a lot of moving around the house or delicate work when it comes to dusting little fragile items around the house. But since I don't like to move so much, if I can stay in one place, I'm a little bit safer and control my movements. So I'll often clean the bathrooms. I mean, for me, cleaning a tub or a shower isn't such a bad thing. I can stay mostly in one place, not have to worry about running into all kinds of objects that might have moved during the cleaning process. So I'll often partition tasks that way.
And I always run the vacuum cleaner because if you've ever been around a vacuum cleaner, you'll know they're quite loud. And, you know, Pete can't see already. If he can't hear anything else that's going on, he gets disoriented in the room and gets turned around. And he's been known to vacuum, you know, when I had my shoulder surgery, for example, but it's not his favorite, and I really don't mind. I borrow his noise-canceling headphones that he uses on the plane, and I use them with the vacuum cleaner, but, you know, I do the part that he can't stand, which is vacuuming. He does the part I can't stand, which is cleaning the bathrooms, and at the end of a couple hours, the house is clean.
You know, also, when we're doing washes, we separate our tasks there also. I always haul the wash down and put it in the washing machine and start it. But there are some clothes that are too delicate and she doesn't like going into the dryer. So she usually dumps things into the dryer. Then when they're done in the dryer, I'll get them out, bring them upstairs and start folding some of them, and we'll partition that task. So the other interesting thing that happens around here is when you like to decorate the house and maybe you want to put up some new curtains, or we want to buy a new rug or a new sofa, and you have to make sure that the colors match and the patterns match. And these days, I don't see much. I can barely tell if the lights are on sometimes. So I'm not much help in that. But the way I help is often by gauging Nancy's reactions. I mean, I can tell when she's looking at something whether she thinks it's neat or not. I mean, her voice is somehow more excited or she's more agitated. And so this way I can give her some kind of second opinions, even though I can't see these things myself.
And when we're not decorating or cleaning the house, we have to live in the house. And as any blind person will tell you, everything has a place.
Everything.
It better stay in that place.
Well, because if something moves by more than a couple of inches, to me, it's gone. That makes it easy for her to hide my gifts. She can put them in places that I usually don't look by myself.
That's great.
But seriously, I mean, everything in the refrigerator, the orange juice is always on the top left shelf. Our daughter came home a couple of days ago, and she put the orange juice someplace else, and I couldn't find it. Well, you know, I could, but it wasn't immediately where I was looking. It was like, what happened to the orange juice? Didn't I make any?
And she hadn't moved it very far. It was still on the top shelf, but closer to the right-hand side, and, you know, a refrigerator just isn't that big.
Right. And the other thing along those lines in the kitchen is making sure all the cabinet doors are closed and doors pushed in. Sometimes we'll have visitors here and they'll be helping us cook. We'll be doing a cooking project and they'll open a cupboard door to get a plate out and they'll leave it open. Well, that's a disaster waiting to happen if I walk by, because my head is just about that level. So Nancy's always closing those and telling visitors, you know, that they ought to close doors, push in chairs and things like that.
Another thing that I did for Pete, because he sometimes walks into things, is we put a bench in the garage right near the entrance to the house, and he kept walking into it. And so I kept wrapping foam around the corners, around the edges. Finally, I wound up with the whole thing wrapped in foam, and then I put some vinyl over top of that, basically to keep the foam in and keep the foam from getting wrecked. And now it looks like we have this very elegant upholstered bench in the garage, but it's really just padded to keep Pete from whacking his shins.
You do try to protect me.
We always found ways to be efficient, especially back in the day when we had two big jobs and two small children. This is less important now that we don't have jobs and the kids have moved out. But because Pete can't really do a full grocery run and get enough food for four people for a week while I'm at home doing home repairs or vice versa, a lot of things had to happen sequentially, and that meant that time was really at a premium, especially since we only ever had one driver and one car. And so efficiency was really important to us. So we would do things like schedule four concurrent appointments for haircuts at the same hair salon with four different people cutting our four different heads of hair. And we always got a good laugh from everybody and sometimes a little pushback from the operator of the salon saying, well, we can't book four people in one family at once. What if none of you show up? And we're like, look, we have one driver, one car. We're all four coming at once. And we never missed an appointment. They were okay with it. The other thing we always did was made sure to arrange carpools with the parents of the other kids. And even though they didn't initially see the need for a carpool, once they tried it, they were all converts. They loved it.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
Now for this week's final item. Well, life isn't all full of practicalities. Sometimes you have to have fun. And for this segment, we'll be talking about playing and things that we do just because they're enjoyable.
Well, a lot of our activities are very active. As we said, we met dancing, but you know, shortly after we got together, we were running and hiking and biking and doing all kinds of things. And in doing those activities, we always have to make some kind of accommodations. For example, I can't bicycle by myself.
We bought a tandem bicycle. And then after some number of years, I got carpal tunnel from doing too much computing at work. And so although we always had a tandem because of Pete's limitations, we needed a recumbent because of mine. So we bought a recumbent tandem bicycle, which is a pretty uncommon sight. And we get all manner of comments when people see us on this thing.
But it sure was a lot of fun. And then we also make accommodations when we go hiking. So I've learned to hike with a lekkie, which is a strong kind of pole that people use for hiking or sometimes for cross-country skiing, and it's adjustable in length. But I find that I use that half as a cane with one hand and half for a little bit of stability if I step on a rock that isn't quite sturdy enough or shifts around. And then my other hand, I put on Nancy's shoulder, and I'll follow back and forth.
Well, and the other thing is, when we're hiking, the terrain is, shall we say, less predictable than on a sidewalk. And so we'll come upon obstacles that require a little bit of forewarning. So we've developed a little lexicon of terms of things that are really important to convey to Pete. So if there's a low-hanging branch, I'll just tell him to duck. And I don't often distinguish between rocks and roots and other manners of unevenness. I'll just tell him there's a lump coming up.
The other thing that kept us very active was having children, and our son loved to play football. Well, that wasn't the best of sports for me, but it turned out we worked that out also. I was always the quarterback, and I would give him these interesting plays where he'd go out and count to two, and then on three, cut over to this side, and then move back to the other side. And I would just start him off, and he'd go one, two, three, four, and we had to agree to throw on a certain count. And I'd throw it where he ought to be. And that's how we used to play football. Now, occasionally, if it was just our son and me, he would run the ball back to me. But sometimes Nancy would come with us and we'd run around the block doing this. And then he would throw the ball back to her.
I always brought a baseball mitt because the kid threw the ball so hard it would hurt to catch it.
He had a strong arm.
Yeah.
So we made accommodations playing. My latest endeavor is to be in a jazz trio with some retired friends from work.
And so we thought we'd invite Cy and Mike to talk about what it's like playing music with Pete and what kind of accommodations they need for that.
So can you guys just introduce yourselves?
Okay, my name is Cy Edmonds, and I'm the bass player in the Peter Corpi Trio.
And I'm Michael DiLuzio, I'm the guitar player.
And who are you?
Oh, I'm Pete Torpy, and I'm the piano player.
You guys have been playing together for 30 years in various formats. What stories or experiences or memories do you have about anything that might have been impacted in your playing together because the piano player is blind?
Well, there's some technical things like the fact that he can't read music, so he can't distribute the music that way. It has to be worked around. That has been a major non-problem, I would say, and that isn't really a trouble at all, but we do have a different process for conveying, you know, what music we're going to play.
Yeah, but the sheet music part of it actually got me into one of the programs that Pete uses, because that's the way we share music back and forth. So,
which program is that, Mike?
That is Band in a Box. What will typically happen is Pete will send out a lead sheet, and it will have a melody and some chords. And I'll go through it, and I might revoice the chords or change a few of them here and there. And then I, instead of sending back, you know, a lead sheet to Pete, what I'll do is send back a band in the box file, you know, with the chords input into the software. And so Pete ends up, you know, listening to it. And then we'll iterate back and forth that way and arrive at something that, you know, we're both happy with.
Yeah, that seems to work out pretty well for trading arrangements back and forth, because I can access band in a box with JAWS on the computer.
So I'm actually curious, you know, most bands, I get the impression when they're performing, they're giving each other visual cues back and forth about who's going to do what, when, and how are you going to stop and all that. But you all can't be passing visual cues back and forth to each other. How do you work that out?
Well, I think much credit goes to Mike. He's extremely well organized. We have cheat sheets to show the exact arrangement that we're going to play. So instead of, I play the bands like that too, you know, you look at the other guy when you want him to play. We can't do that, but we decide in advance who's going to play what and when, and we practice it diligently. No, it's not a bad system anyway. It's pretty good, actually.
And even within the arrangements, I mean, I think we've developed, you know, a sort of intuition where I've got some sense of what colors Pete's going to pull from his particular palette. And at those times, I might play some very basic, you know, like thirds and sevenths, for example. And then I can tell when he's laying back, which says, oh, you know, throw in some color, you know. So we've got some intuition back and forth.
Well, and we've also learned to listen to each other, I think. Every once in a while, if someone plays an extra chorus or leaves out one, you can kind of hear where the thing's going, and everybody just sort of plays along and compensates, right?
Yeah, it rarely happens that we have a complete collision. If we were all sighted, I'm not sure it would help that much anyway.
Right. right.
Just last night with a different band, we have a thing where there's a long, long, long series of chords that's the same, and then everybody's got to change at the last one. And the idea is that the drummer looks up and makes eye contact. That's how we know, right?
Oh,
but he was just playing the drum. He looked up, and so we changed chords, and he didn't. And it was just the whole thing didn't work. So we had to work out a different arrangement, which had him playing a little flourish with the drum before in the chord change, so that we don't need to look at each other. So I think that may be a little bit overrated, I guess, that's what I'm saying.
Well, Mike alluded to the Band in a Box software that we use for trading music back and forth, and we actually did a show on Band in a Box. We'll have a link to that in our show notes. And there are also some scripts for using Band in a Box with JAWS to make it accessible that I've written, and we'll have links to that also in the show notes. But, you know, you do have to play sometime, and music is one of the fun things I like to do, and this jazz trio has been a great thing for the three of us. And Nancy, who's our webmaster, and photographer, publicist, and all kinds of other things.
Bookkeeper, roadie, groupie, and muse, but only for Pete.
So I think you've heard a little bit about us and how we balance out each other in our lives. And as Nancy said, we've been together for just a touch over 30 years, and it's all been wonderfully enjoyable.
And I think it turned out that it was okay. I wasn't reluctant to marry a blind man. Nothing really bad ever happened.
Nothing you couldn't fix with a Steri-Strip or a Band-Aid.
Oh, I've gotten really good with Steri-Strips and Band-Aids. Unfortunately, I've had lots of experience. Well, this was a repeat of a show from a fairly long time ago, but pretty much everything in it is still true. We're still together, you'll be relieved to know. The only minor change I'd add is that Pete has traded in his hiking stick for an all-terrain cane from a werewolf gear, and the trio has split up because we moved across the country.
Anyway, people should always check out the show notes associated with each episode. There's lots of contact information in there and additional resources. So, for example, this is episode 2502. If you check on the show notes for that, you'll find some useful information there. I hope people make use of that.
That's it for today's show. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the Blind Institute of Technology, or BIT, which empowers people with disabilities through skill development training and career placement. We'll talk with Christy Schenderlein, Director of Operations at BIT, about their innovative programs, their funding model, and the critical role of assistive technology in workplace success.
And that could be a useful resource for people looking for employment. We hope we'll catch you for next week's episode.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
You can access the full archive of previous shows, subscribe to the podcast, and much more by going to our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net. If you have questions about anything you've heard on the show or have suggestions for future shows, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net.
Thank you for listening and have a nice day.